I heard this from Rav Noach Weinberg Zatzal, the Rosh Hashiva and founder of Esh HaTorah. He told a story that when Armstrong landed on the moon, he came down and he couldn't believe what he found. He comes down and he says, Houston, we have a problem. There's a Russian flag here sitting planted in the moon. They actually beat us here. You know, there was a race to the moon. America was desperately trying to beat the Russians there, and they thought they did it. And when he got there, they actually found the Russian flag sitting there on the moon. And the scientists there are all going berserk, going crazy. How could this be? They beat us there? We thought for sure we got there first, and they left a flag just to taunt us. What is going on? And they all go into their rooms, and they're working and doing mathematical equations and pulling out charts and trying to figure out how it could have happened. Finally, one brilliant scientist comes running out and says, I got it. I figured it out. And he starts putting up all these diagrams for everyone to see, and he shows them that the Russians, in fact, did not ever get to the moon. And it was through a series of random events that the Russian flag happened to just form there. That flag there wasn't actually a real Russian flag produced as a flag. It was actually just a bunch of particles that came together and happened to form what exactly appears to be a Russian flag. And everyone celebrated. Thank goodness they didn't beat us here. All the scientists were so happy. They announced, in fact, the United States are the first ones to the moon. Now, of course, that's ludicrous. Would anyone possibly believe that a flag with a design on its own generated on the moon? Well, after enough years, you have enough years, billions and billions of years, anything could happen. Just wait long enough. Things collide and come together, and anything can come together. People, animals, Russian flags, yeah, anything. Nobody would believe that. But people are very ready to believe that after billions of years, enough time will come together, and you'll get animals and humans. Yeah, that I could believe. Just happened. It's amazing that people could believe in such a thing. Oh, I know, evolution. Evolution explains it. And that there's a universe, let's say, that was created that could on its own have a system that itself improves. A world suddenly came together, magically the pieces formed, a world that can improve on itself. That alone wouldn't boggle the mind. And by the way, one thing I never quite understood, I finally looked into it a little bit, is, you know, evolution only explains where things came from once there was DNA. It describes the mutations of DNA to form more and more advanced organisms. But it's all built on DNA starting and mutating. Do you know how complicated DNA is? DNA is the supercomputer that keeps track of every part of your body. That the supercomputer, that every cell has the full code that describes how your entire body forms and acts. The DNA that by itself self-replicates, that has the code for every type of protein that's needed and how it should be made. Where did that come from? The most amazing part of you, I think, is your DNA. That it can replicate on its own and create more cells. Oh, they have an answer for that too. It's the Russian flag answer, I kid you not. After enough time, all the particles came together and made a supercomputer, a microscopic supercomputer called DNA, which, by the way, doesn't even make sense, I'm told by scientists, this I don't know, but I'm told it doesn't even make sense that particles that would have to come together wouldn't naturally be able to stick and exist together anyways. I couldn't really tell you. But what I could tell you is I spent a lot of time learning about DNA, and it's awesome. And there's no way that anyone could sit there and say that DNA came from a bunch of particles that happened to come together and believe in that instead of believing in a baryolium? It's lunacy. But people believe what they want to believe. That's the answer. The answer is people believe, if they don't want to believe, they latch on to any excuse to not believe. You hear the story about the Russian, about the scientist claiming the flag came from nothing, and you obviously know that's ridiculous. Why is it not so obvious that people, DNA, can't just come from nothing? But this is the human condition, that we look for excuses, ways out. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew this very, very well when he sent Moshe Rabbeinu to warn Paro about Makas Bechoros. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Moshe and told him, tell Paro that there's a Makkah coming. That's coming at Chatzos. Moshe Rabbeinu came. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, the Makkah's coming? Kachatzos. There's going to be the biggest Makkah of all the Makkahs. We just went through 9 of them. They were enormous. They were horrible. They were devastating. They ravaged your country, and it's only about to get worse. You're now going to experience Makas Bechoros. Every one of those Makas happened exactly as I told you they would, and they stopped exactly when I told you they would. Makas Bechoros is going to happen around Chatzos. Kachatzos. Why did he say around Chatzos? Why didn't he say at Chatzos? Gemara in Bracha says that he was worried. Not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu couldn't do it exactly at Chatzos. That would definitely not be the problem. He was worried that the Mitzrim wouldn't be able to properly calculate exactly when Chatzos is. Little known fact, sundials don't actually work at night. And maybe they'd get it wrong. Maybe they wouldn't know exactly when Chatzos is. And they would think it's Chatzos. And the firstborn wouldn't be dying. And they'd all say, Moshe Badoy, who Moshe's a liar. Ha! Moshe Rabbeinu, what does he know? There were 9 makas. He got them all right. Hit it right on the head. 10th maka, too. It's 15 minutes late. And now they start dying. Ha! Moshe! That guy? We should trust in that guy? He claims he's working for God. He said, it didn't happen at midnight. Obviously, it's not really the hand of God. Obviously. He got it wrong. 10 makos. But if the last one they think is a few minutes off, they're not going to believe in Moshe Rabbeinu. They're not going to see the Yad Hashem. They're so crazy. Humans are so crazy. We are so crazy that we can be dazzled to the nth degree. We can study biology and study physics and look around at the amazing world around us and say, who says it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Maybe it just happened. 10 makas could happen, but we latch on to our one little mistaken excuse to justify our not believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the Yetzer Hara everyone has at some point. We have to remind ourselves often. You need to remind yourselves that it's insanity. It's temporary insanity when you think in this way. When you say, "Well, where is Hashem? Where is Hashem? Where is he?" This I have a question. Here's my question. If I had this is my question. Whatever random nonsense you come up with at the moment. And at the moment, it seems like a really good question, a strong question. But it's not. It's a question on the level of Makas Bechoros happened 5 minutes late. Okay, there were 10 makos. Wake up and smell the coffee. The Amunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't make it easy for us. He gave us Yetzer Hara that lets us trick ourselves. You'd think it's easy when you look at the amazing world and you learn the beautiful Torah. You'd think it's easy. How could anyone miss it? But at moments when the Yetzer Hara gets you, it's not easy. And we have to go back often, remind ourselves back to the ABCs that our emunah is based on very rock-solid reasons to believe in a Bariolum. And if we want to believe, then we'll remind ourselves of that, and we'll have a strong emunah. If we don't want to, then we could be as foolish as Hashem Moshe Rabbeinu knew the Mitzrim would be. And I just wanted to add in one more thing, and that is that a love of learning Torah, having a love for Torah learning, seeing a geshmak in the Torah, appreciating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us his wisdom and how to connect to him, appreciating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us how to understand the world and how he relates to it, appreciating the amazing chachma of the Torah and enjoying it, is a very similar challenge. If you want it, you will see the geshmak. If you want it and you work at it, it will be delicious. If you don't, and you're not interested, then no matter what anybody shows you, you will not find any geshmak in your learning. If you allow yourself to sink into a mindset, I don't care, stupid, I don't care, then no matter how geshmak the sugya is, it will not move you. Mishnah Pergava says, Haveshosa bitsama es divrayim. You have to thirstily drink the words of Chazal. You should be so interested in the words of Chazal, it should be like you're desperately thirsty to learn their words. Rabbi Yonah writes that somebody who loves learning wants to learn. Anything you tell them, they're desperate to hear. They love to hear. They see the geshmak in it. They see how amazing it is. And somebody who doesn't want to learn, no matter what you tell them, they say, big deal. Big chiddush. Not impressed. And it's the same Yetzirah. If you want, it's your mindset. If you're interested, if you're motivated, then the glaring, obvious beauty of the Torah and the geshmak of learning the Torah will be very tangible. You will enjoy the learning. If you want to, and you push yourself to do it, then you will enjoy your learning. If you don't want to, no matter how much your Rebbe stands there and tells you the most geshmak Torah in the world, unfortunately, your Yetzer Hara, if he gets you, it won't have any effect. It's all about our mindset and our approach. Our emunah and our avas Torah and our love of learning, we need to want it. If we don't want it, the Yetzer Hara is going to get in and fool us into not seeing what should be so obvious and right in front of us.